Chapter 3. Embassy of the United States of America. Lauro Miller, 1776. Montevideo, República Oriental del Uruguay. 18:35 hours, 9 September, 2005. The Honorable Michael A. McGrory, the Ambassador Extraordinary and Plenipotentiary of the President of the United States to the Republic of Uruguay, was a small and wiry, well-tailored man of 55 with a full head of curly gray hair. His staff referred to him as Napoleon and Señor Pomposa. McGrory looked across his highly polished wooden desk at Special Agent David W. Young, who sat beside Colin Leverett. Robert Howell, the embassy's cultural attaché, stood near the door. McGrory smiled and said to Young, "If you'll be good enough to give me a minute alone with Mr. Howell, I need to speak with him on another matter. You can be on your way." "Thank you, Mr. Ambassador," Young said. "And it's been a pleasure meeting you, Mr. Leverett. If you need something for Ambassador Lorimer, anything at all, that either Mr. Young or Mr. Howell can't arrange, please feel free to come see me at any time."
"Thank you very much, sir," Leverett said.
Young and Leverett stood up, shook the ambassador's hand, and walked out of the ambassador's office, closing the door behind them.
"Well, Howell, what do you think?" McGrory asked.
"What do I think about what, Mr. Ambassador?" Howell replied.
While officially the cultural attaché of the embassy, Howell was in fact the CIA's Uruguay station chief.
"What do we really have here?"
"Excuse me?"
"You don't see anything odd in Lorimer's father coming down here to live on that estancia in the middle of nowhere with a butler?"
"I thought that was pretty well explained when Young told us the ambassador lost his home in Hurricane Katrina, sir."
"And the presence of Young? That didn't strike you as unusual?"
"I can think of a likely scenario, sir."
"Let's have it."
"It could very well be that the secretary, who I think has known the ambassador a long time, went out of her way to do what she could for the ambassador. She knows he has a heart condition. His son-in-law was murdered, and right after Mr. Masterson's remains were repatriated, the hurricane struck and destroyed the ambassador's home."
"Ha!"
the ambassador snorted. "And Young, who was on the secretary's personal staff,
we learned after the fact?"
McGrory interrupted. "Nobody knew that when he was here."
"Yes, sir."
"Well, he was available. He was still accredited diplomatically down here. Young probably struck her as the obvious choice to come here and set things up.
Traveling in a private Gulfstream jet airplane? I wonder what that cost."
"I don't like to think, Mr. Ambassador. But on the other hand, we know the ambassador's daughter came into her husband's money, and we know how much of that there is. It poses no financial strain on her to charter airplanes, or, for that matter, to pay for the private security people who will be coming here with the ambassador."
"And none of this strikes you as suspicious?"
"I don't know what to suspect, Mr. Ambassador."
"Years ago, Howell, there was a terribly racist saying to the effect that one suspected an African-American in the woodpile."
"I'm familiar with the expression, sir. But I don't know what Ambassador Lorimer could be concealing."
"I'm not referring to Ambassador Lorimer,"
Ambassador McGrory said impatiently, stopping himself just in time from finishing the sentence with, "You idiot."
"You're referring to the butler, sir?
Leverett?"
McGrory stared at Howell and thought,
"I can't believe this. This man works for the Central Intelligence Agency? If he's typical, and I suspect he is, they should call it the Central Stupidity Agency."
"No,"
Ambassador McGrory said carefully, aware he was on the edge of losing his temper. After a moment, hoping his contempt
wasn't showing, he went on. That was a figure of speech, Howell. A figure of speech only. I was suggesting that there's something about this whole sequence of events that doesn't seem... He stopped himself just in time from saying, kosher.
Quite right.
And what is that, Mr. Ambassador? Howell asked. If you've been in this business as long as I have, Howell, you develop a sense, a feeling, McGrory explained, somewhat smugly.
I understand, Howell said. How may I help, Mr. Ambassador?
You can keep a close eye on Young and that man, Leverett. See if they do anything suspicious. See who they talk to.
Yes, sir.
I think the best way to handle this is just report everything you see or hear.
Yes, sir.
Any time of the day or night.
Yes, sir.
Ambassador McGrory dismissed Howell with a wave of his hand, then rose from his desk and walked to the window. It provided a view of the Rambla, the road that ran along the Atlantic Ocean beach. The water was muddy because it bore all the silt and God only knows what else from the River Plate. It didn't become clear, really become the Atlantic Ocean, until Punta del Este, 100-odd kilometers north. McGrory stood at the window for perhaps 3 minutes, debating whether or not to call his brother-in-law. He really didn't like Senator Homer Johns. While McGrory admitted that his brother-in-law had had a lot to do with his being named ambassador to Uruguay, it was also true that Homer not only reminded him of this entirely too often, but accompanied the reminder with some snide observation about McGrory's slow movement up the ranks of the Foreign Service. McGrory didn't know why Homer bitterly hated the Director of National Intelligence, Ambassador Charles W. Montvale, but he suspected it was because Montvale and not Homer had gotten that job when it was created after 9/11. Homer was on the Senate Intelligence Committee and thought the job should have been his. Homer hadn't been at all sympathetic when McGrory had called him and told him how the Deputy Foreign Minister, Alvarez, had as much as called him a liar in his own office when he had told him that there were no special forces teams operating in Uruguay, that anything like that could not take place without his permission. And the senator hadn't been at all impressed when McGrory told him that he had figured out what had really happened with Lorimer at his estancia, that Lorimer had been a big-time drug dealer on the side, using his United Nations diplomatic passport whenever that helped. The first time he had told that to the senator's reply had been, "Mike, that's the most absurd bullshit you've ever tried to hand me." And Homer hadn't even apologized when McGrory had called him to report A, the Uruguayan cops had finally figured out what had happened, a drug deal gone bad, just as McGrory had said, and B, that he had gotten this from Deputy Foreign Minister Alvarez, together with an apology for what Alvarez had said to him in the beginning. He'd gotten back a little at Homer. He didn't want to go too far with that, of course. There were more important diplomatic posts than Uruguay, and his brother-in-law could be helpful again in that regard, the last time Homer had called. Homer said he had just gotten word from a good source, a woman who had been canned by the CIA and was highly pissed, that Montvale had indeed sent a special forces team to Uruguay to keep Lorimer from running off at the mouth. Homer said she had also supplied the name of the guy in charge, Castillo. McGrory had smiled knowingly at the purported news. "Homer," he had said, "I know all about Castillo. He works for the Department of Homeland Security, and he just happened to be in Argentina and was put in charge of protecting the Masterson family until they could get out of Argentina. That's all. He's a lousy major, is all. I think your source is full of shit." You know about this Castillo, do you?
Yes, I do.
Lorimer was killed by drug people, not by special forces.
I don't know, Mike. My source sounded pretty sure of herself.
Why did she come to you, Homer? As an outraged citizen? Or a disgruntled employee trying to make trouble for the CIA? Why'd she get fired?
She didn't tell me that, Homer had said, and then added, she does have a reputation around town for sleeping around.
Well, there you have it, Homer.
Maybe. But what I want you to do anyway, Mike, is keep your eyes and ears open. I want to hear of anything at all that happens down there that's out of the ordinary. Let me decide whether or not it's important.
Okay, Ambassador McGrory thought, still looking out his window at the muddy waters of the River Plate. On one hand, while Ambassador Lorimer coming down here is a little odd, it is true that New Orleans is underwater, and that his daughter, Masterson's widow, now has her hands on that $60 million Jack the Stack got when that beer truck ran over him. So having a butler and flying around in a chartered jet airplane isn't so strange. What the hell could a retired old ambassador with a heart condition be into, but waiting to die? And on the other hand, Homer said he wants to hear anything out of the ordinary to let him decide what's important. So I'll call him and tell him about this, and he can run it past his source, the lady with the round heels reputation who got canned from the CIA, and see what she has to say. And when some other post, Buenos Aires, for example, comes open, he can remember how useful I have been to him whenever he asked for something.
McGrory went to his desk, picked up the telephone, and told the operator to get Senator Homer Johns, and not anyone on Johns's staff, on a secure line.